I call the Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, March 19th, and the time is 3:30 p.m. Please remember to turn off your cell phones. Committee members present today, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Myers, Senator Klayman, and myself, Senator Giesel. I do expect Senator Wilikowski, Senator Dunbar, and Senator Hughes to join us shortly. And there's Senator Wilikowski already. We have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Heather and to Emma for keeping the records and running our audio for us, because without those, we can't function. So thank you. All right, today's agenda, we're going to consider the governor's appointees to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. There are three of them. We will take public testimony as well. And then after that, we will hear Senate Joint Resolution Number 8, International Relations with Taiwan. So, number one, we will consider the appointees to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Before we start, in your packet of information, members should have a document that describes the Regulatory Commission of Alaska and the requirements for commissioners. So I'll just briefly review them, because often the public is listening or will review these recordings later. The commission is made up of five commissioners. They're appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature in joint session. So we will interview these folks today. The names will go forward, and then when the House and Senate meet, we will vote on their confirmation. The member must be, a member must be in good standing with the Alaska Bar Association or have a degree from an accredited college or university with a major in engineering, finance, economics, accounting, business administration, or public administration. Actual experience for a period of 5 years in the practice of law or in the field of engineering, finance, economics, accounting, business administration, or public administration is equivalent to a degree. The term of office is 6 years. The salary range, the payment range, was just increased last year in some legislation. The salary is equivalent to step 27 of the salary schedule for Juneau. Restrictions. The commissioners may not have an official connection with, hold stock or securities in, or have a pecuniary interest in a public utility or pipeline carrier within the state. So those are, there are lots more statutes that go into some other details, but those are the key points just for consideration as we interview these appointees. So the first person we're going to interview is John Springsteen. So, Mr. Springsteen, if you could come forward. I will also welcome Senator Dunbar and Senator Hughes to the committee. Thank you for joining us. Welcome, Mr. Springsteen. Mr. Springsteen's resume is in is before members of the committee and is also posted online for folks who are listening. It is a substantial resume, very impressive. Welcome, Mr. Springsteen.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee, for having me here today. For the record, my name is John Springsteen. I'm a commissioner with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska with the term ending in March of 2030. For background, I began my service to the state in 2014 with the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, also known as ADA. I received a quick introduction to rural Alaska during my first year with ADA, traveling to communities off of the road system to discuss projects and investments of the authority. Sleeping on gym floors and being grateful for a warm, dry place to sleep, I had the opportunity to learn about subsistence lifestyles, native culture, and certain of the challenges faced by rural Alaskan residents, including challenges around building local economies, creating job opportunities, and overcoming the high cost of energy. From 2015 to 2019, I served as ADA's executive director, where my key activities included creating ADA's project finance framework and retooling ADA's project evaluation processes and investment strategy to focus on project quality, quality of partners, and appropriate distribution of risks and rewards. Assisting the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation to access $165 million in capital for hospital construction, improvement, and expansion in Bethel, Alaska through the issuance of a conduit revenue bond. Ongoing work for the Ambler Mining District Industrial Access Project, which continues today. And negotiating and concluding transactions to reduce the cost of energy in interior Alaska, transitioning control of the natural gas supply chain to the interior gas utility while fairly compensating the private seller. From 2019 to 2021, I served as Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. My initial focus at Commerce was on bolstering existing and future economic engines for the state, but we were soon all hands on deck at the department to mitigate the impacts of COVID and administering COVID relief funds to small businesses across the state. I am sitting here today thankful that we've put COVID in the rearview mirror. In the wake of COVID, I joined the governor's office in 2021 as policy advisor and state corporation liaison to the state-owned corporations and authorities. So in addition to duties as assigned, my responsibilities included working with the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation, the Municipal Bond Bank, the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, the Alaska Aerospace Corporation, the Trust Lands Office of the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, the Alaska Railroad Corporation, and the Alaska Energy Authority to pursue different ways to advance economic engine development in the state. I was appointed to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska in late May of 2024, and after completing my duties in the governor's office, I started my role as one of RCA's five commissioners in July of 2024. During my time in state service, I've also had the opportunity to serve on a number of boards, including the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank Authority, the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, the Nature Conservancy Alaska, and the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute. And prior to state service, I spent 2 decades in the private sector serving as an environmental engineer, as an economic advisor to multinational corporations, as a management consultant to industrial and high-tech companies, and as chief financial officer of a U.S. publicly traded natural gas exploration company focused on coal bed methane development. My experience in the private sector has taken me from the reservoir to wellhead, pipe, processing and treatment, liquefaction, shipping, regasification, turbine, rotor and stator, transformer, transmission line, distribution line, and to the home. Experience that I gained in the private sector relevant to my role at the RCA includes the aforementioned services, chief financial officer of a natural gas exploration company, assisting a Midwestern electric utility to prepare its business plan in light of deregulation during the late 1990s, working with a rooftop solar company to market solutions designed for campus and warehouse installations, and advising a major energy exploration and production company on their LNG export project from Qatar for import into the Texas-Louisiana Gulf Coast. For background and to address the relatively new statutory education requirements for RCA commissioners, I earned an undergraduate degree in civil engineering from MIT and a Master of Business Administration from the Kellogg Graduate School of Management at Northwestern University. And in closing, I've had the opportunity to raise my 3 kids in Alaska, my son from middle school age and my 2 girls from elementary school age. And this May, I'll celebrate 25 years of marriage to my amazing wife, Christy. It took us a while to get here to Alaska, but we look forward to spending the rest of our lives in this great state. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Springsteen. Committee members, questions for Mr. Springsteen? Senator Myers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you mentioned working for an energy company going through a period of deregulation. Looking at some deregulation across the country, it seemed like in kind of that mid to late 90s era, it seemed like some states did it really well and some states did it really poorly. I'd just be curious to hear your reflections on that time and kind of what lessons you learned about doing it well or doing it poorly.
Yeah, and through the chair, Senator Myers, thank you very much for the question. A great question. It was a challenging time, and it was also one of the first experiments in deregulation that we were working through. And what we found for the client that we were working for is they isolated their approach to focus on their commercial and industrial clients, and then leaving the other opportunities to be able to provide, residential consumer service to other parties. So they fixed on the most profitable and the easiest, administrative clients as they deregulated. And what we found was this kind of mishmash of new generation being put on without much tight regulation and an overall, net increase in the cost for residential consumers. So for that experiment, they're still having those challenges today of, what's the appropriate level of, regulation or deregulation.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Wilikowski.
Yeah, thank you. How long have you been on the commission?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Wilikowski. I began my service with the commission in July of 2024. So, several months to date.
Follow-up?
And so we have, I don't know if you've seen it, we have a letter to the committee from the Alaska Public Interest Research Group. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Expressing some pretty significant concerns over the staffing at RCA. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that, and I'll just give you a couple statistics they cited. Maybe you can verify if they're correct or incorrect. But they note, quote, consistently about 15 unfilled positions over the past 3 years, even as proposed staffing levels have dropped. They note extremely high rate of turnover as of March 2025. Half of RCA staff employed in January 2023 have left. 20 out of 41 RCA staff from January 2023 remain at the RCA. They note a high turnover among commissioners. Only 2 of 5 have been on the commission over 9 months. They note that the term of the current chair actually expired a couple of weeks ago, and he still has not been reappointed. I don't know if these are accurate or not. Can you verify whether these are accurate, and what's going on over there?
Okay. Through the chair to Vice Chair Wilikowski, that was a very rich question, so I'll try to take them a bit at a time. So for the staff of the RCA and then turnover, I think we're, no stranger to the issues that are faced by other parts of the state. So, we have some things that have happened where, we have folks that have been trained and developed, within the RCA, and they have a valuable skill set, and they find other opportunities, from the private sector or private industry. We have other cases where, we have, staff that come and join the RCA, and then they move on into service at other parts of the state. It's a very, very difficult problem to deal with in terms of, the training and transitions. It's not unique amongst the state entities, at least from what I've heard from other parties. And, I liken this to some of the challenges that I experienced talking to folks in rural Alaska. You have somebody that's there and they maintain the diesel gen set at the powerhouse, and they develop a skill set. And then they're valuable to somebody else, and then they get hired away to do something else. So that's what I have experienced during my time during the RCA, in terms of employees that have moved on to other opportunities. And then, can you help me through just kind of the next parts of the questions? Through the chair to the vice chair.
Yeah. No, I'm just trying to understand it. One of the ones that concerns me is the rate of turnover, 50% roughly, since 2023. That's enormous, 2 years. And you said something that set a little bit of an alarm off for me, is that people are going to the private sector. And I'm curious what the rules are. I hope that people who are regulating industries aren't leaving and going to the industries that they were regulating. I hope there's some sort of firewall there, some sort of process that says you can't be negotiating for jobs while you're regulating the industry that you're negotiating for a job from. Please tell me there's something in effect that says that.
Yes, through the chair, Vice Chair Wilikowski. Yes, and I take that very seriously in terms of the presentation of conflict of interest issues, and then we have a statute and regulation at the RCA that is a barrier to having those types of shifts occur, from RCA staff out to, a regulated entity.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
Do you have a list of the places? I'd be interested in seeing, and from the commission, this would be a request, Madam Chair, if I could.
Yes.
Perhaps through the committee. I'd be interested in seeing, because it's 20 people in the last 2 years, and I'd be interested in seeing the jobs that they held and the places that the jobs that they went to, the companies that they went to. Can you get us that information?
Through the chair to the vice chair, I will make the request as one of the five sitting commissioners. I'm not in the seat that handles the administration of the commission, but I can carry forward the request, sir.
Thank you, and we could submit that in writing to the commission. There is a statement in the statute restricting a person leaving the position to act as an agent for or on behalf of a public utility in any matter before the commission. And there are probably some other issues in here. It's a pretty long statute, but that's a great question we'll follow up on. Further questions, Senator Wilikowski?
No.
Any other questions from committee members? Yes, Senator Klayman.
Mr. Springsteen, before you joined the commission, you had a number of positions in the executive branch, including ADA, which is sort of independent but kind of part of the executive branch too. What's your perspective in terms of the independence of the RCA with respect to the independence of the RCA?
Through the chair to Senator Klayman, it is a unique role, and it's a quasi-judicial capacity requiring independence, and I respect that. There have been times where we are sitting and we're deliberating a matter amongst commissioners. Well, I'll kind of carry forward how I think something should happen, but then I'm tempered and thankful for the other commissioners in the room reminding me of what the role, the quasi-judicial role of the RCA is.
Follow-up, Senator Klayman?
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I guess I'm curious, I know with judges in the legal profession, there's no ex parte communications allowed at all, and I'm curious if there is a similar rule in the RCA regarding ex parte communications with parties or with people trying to influence your decisions.
Through the chair to the vice chair, excellent question. Thank you for the question. So our general goal is to be able to receive communications in a public forum. If we are approached in an ex parte manner, we do report. I had actually one instance where an individual had contacted me by email on a matter that actually wasn't before the regulatory commission, but my practice was to take that and forward it on, make the other commissioners aware, and to do my reporting.
Follow up.
And then I'm just curious, does that extend to legislators or people from the executive branch trying to influence your decision making?
Through the chair to the vice chair, I would actually defer to our commissioner with a deep legal background who will be in front of you, but I believe the same rules apply.
Thank you.
Further questions? All right, seeing none. Thank you, Mr. Springsteen.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee.
All right. The next commissioner appointee is Mark A. Johnston. Mr. Johnston? Welcome.
Thank you.
If you'd introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee, for the opportunity to discuss my appointment. My name is Mark Johnston. I am a commissioner with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. I was appointed to fill the remaining term of Robert Doyle, which expires March 1 of 2028. I moved to Alaska in 1964, just after the earthquake, so I was much younger then. I have attended elementary, junior high school, and the University of Alaska here. I've been married to my wife, Jean, for almost 22 years. We have two children and four grandchildren. I'd like to address the topic that you brought up earlier. My qualifications under AS 4204020B, specifically B3, I have a bachelor's degree in business administration with an emphasis in accounting from the University of Nevada. I have 40-plus years of experience in accounting, auditing, finance, insurance, and management. 25 years of those were at the executive management level, senior vice president, and CEOs. I am a licensed certified public accountant in the state of Alaska. I have 5 years of regulatory experience, including the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, where I was a financial and compliance auditor and audited electric, gas, pipeline, hydro, and nuclear. I had a short term with the Alaska Public Utilities Commission as the Director of Finance, which was, of course, the precursor to the RCA. I have more than 10 years of consulting experience providing expert witness and consultation with ratepayers, consumer groups such as AERP, utilities, and the APUC. When I left the APUC, there was a matter that I was a member of a team, and the team left, and I was the last one on that team. And I had developed the rate design for that particular matter, so I was a consultant for them. I've consulted on electric, water, refuge, sewer, and telecom. I have a total of 8 years of experience as a chief executive officer at two electric utilities, Municipal Light and Power, where I helped to negotiate the sale of Municipal Light and Power. And then Mountain Parks Electric Cooperative, which is a small electric cooperative in Colorado in the Winter Park area. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss my education and experience and the ability to be able to serve the people of the state of Alaska, and I'm open to answering any questions that you might have.
Very good. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Johnson, for being here. It's been a while since we've got a chance to talk, and I remember we spoke quite a lot when I was on the Assembly, and thank you for working so hard to put yourself out of a job as we sold that utility to Chugach. I'm glad to see that things seem to have gone great, and you're back here, hopefully, to help serve the state. So my question is sort of two parts. First, do you see any ongoing challenges from that sale, from the integration of MLMP and Chugach for the people in Anchorage? And second, sort of what do you see as the primary challenges or regulatory issues that you anticipate coming forward in the coming years at the RCA?
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. Through the chair, that transaction, I think it fulfilled some of the promises that it had the ability to make. I think that one of the goals was reduction in the staff, and the staff savings would help pay for some of the cost. Some of the integration would help to save money. One of the challenges for Chugach was the amount of debt that was required for them to acquire MLNP. And I think that while we've seen those challenges come to fruition, when we were in the middle of that, I was talking to Leith Ebert, who was CEO of Chugach, and they were saying, you know, when we combine, we'll have 540 employees and we need to get down to 400. You know, we think it's going to be a problem. And I said, you're not going to have a problem. Your problem is going to be you don't have enough people. Mm-hmm. And I think that came to fruition because we had about 40% of our employees and their employees that were retirement eligible. And when the acquisition happened, those people started to retire. And so that wasn't the issue. Having the institutional knowledge and being able to do the things, I think, has been the challenge. I am still a close personal friend of Arthur Miller, who is the now CEO of Chugach, and have had opportunities to talk to him when we happened to be on the treadmill at Planet Fitness walking on Saturdays. And I think they're still struggling with some of the things. One of the issues is that they have struggled to keep up with cost as they've increased and load has declined. And I think that that is something that that they continue to struggle with, but they went back to the simplified rate filing, so that makes it easier than going through a full-blown rate case before the RCA, and that will hopefully help them to reduce regulatory lag in being able to recover some of the cost of operating the utility. To your second question about challenges, I think the elephant in the room is the gas supply issue. And I think that it was before several committees down here, somebody was doing presentations, and they kept saying there is no silver bullet. And I think that that is the truth, that there is not one solution that is going to solve the problem. I think that there is a part to play for a number of different solutions, one being utilities and state agencies helping ratepayers to become more energy efficient and reduce the cost overall. I think that there is the ability for the utilities to employ demand-side management to help to reduce the peaks, which will help to reduce the need for gas. There is a part to be played by renewables and bringing in renewables into the system. There's a part to be played by the remaining Cook Inlet producers, Hillcore, Fury, and Bluecrest, in developing gas reserves that are known and available. And I think that based on the need for the gas and the timing, I think that there is probably a need for LNG. Now, how you bring in LNG is the question. I think the issue that you really need to look at is the capital investment, the sunk cost that you have in bringing in LNG, because if a pipeline is completed from the North Slope to bring gas down and is at a lower cost, you don't want to have a huge amount of cost sunk and not be able to either write that off or amortize that over an extended period to be able to lower the cost for all Alaskans. So I think that those are, I mean, that's the major one right now, at least for South Central. I think the high cost of energy for residents everywhere. Each week we do tariff advice meetings, and we look at the cost of power adjustment as well as the PCE program. And you see the costs that some rural communities pay, and it's quite high. And it stifles, growth within the community. I was watching a presentation to one of the resource committees, I believe it was House, and they were talking about a run-of-river project. And it was a $7 million project, and there are 35 people in the community. But the problem is they can't bring in fuel except by plane on a gravel strip. And so I think that there are opportunities to implement technology to help reduce electric costs. Juneau has done a fabulous job of implementing heat pumps. And historically, heat pumps have not worked well within cold climates. My time in Colorado, it was very cold there, actually colder than Anchorage at times. And one of our board members worked with the University of Colorado, and the students designed and built a house for her that won an award, a national award for energy consumption, and she heated the entire house with two heat pumps. And it was about, I think, 1,600 square feet. And there at the time, it wasn't unusual in the winter to be 10 to 20 below. So they can work in cold climates. So I think that there are a lot of things related to the cost of energy. The Rail Belt Transmission Organization, the legislation that was passed, we're seeing that is starting to come to fruition, and that will help with the transmission, because whenever you have to move power, you have capacity limits, and if you can't move the power, it doesn't matter how cheap it is. So that was one of the things when I was at MLMP that we did in working with Homer at times, that we would displace the power that we would have sold to them and sell them basically our share of Bradley. And then we would price the power at what it would cost us to generate that in Anchorage, which was at a relatively low cost, and they would save the cost of the transmission. So it was a win-win for both utilities. I think that some of those things are available. And as we look at the transmission system and do upgrades that are needed, that will allow us to take low-cost energy, such as Bradley and other places, and distribute it more evenly throughout the state. One of the things that we also did was we would do economy energy sales to Golden Valley. They would buy gas, and then they would run it through our electric facilities, and it was cheaper for them to do that, and we would send it up the Intertie. And they don't do that right now because there is no gas available for them. They haven't, I believe, in 24, and in 25 they don't anticipate. I think that if we see a supply of gas, whether it is homegrown, produced from Cook Inlet, North Slope, that is LNG that's imported, I think that that's an opportunity for the folks in Fairbanks to be able to utilize gas purchases, run them through the efficient generation that we have within the Anchorage area and the valley, and reduce the cost of energy in the Fairbanks area. The last is the Rail Belt Reliability Council. standards and standardizing the way that utilities operate to make sure that, that they are operating the most efficient and safe and economical way possible.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions? Senator Klayman.
Similar question I asked Mr. Springsteen. Share with me your perspective on the independence of the RCA.
I believe that that we are independent. I believe the statute allows us to be independent, and we are not influenced by the industry, although they try. We do get inquiries from legislators as well as from the administration, and we address those inquiries, but we try very hard not to be influenced in our decision-making process, our adjudication, when by those inquiries. As Commissioner Springsteen said, we report ex parte communications. We had the opportunity, ACS in Anchorage, they offered us an opportunity to come over and see their facilities and understand better what they do. And we said yes, but we, at the meeting, at the start of the meeting, we laid out that we could not discuss any matters before us. And then we filed the necessary filings to let everybody know that we had had a communication with the utility, what we discussed, and you know where, when, and how it happened. So I believe that the legislature has given us the ability to make decisions independently, and I believe that we exercise that ability.
Follow-up?
Thank you.
Senator Myers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So you mentioned the simplified rate filing and how advantageous that was for Chugach. Recognizing that it would take some statutory changes to allow for it, do you believe that that is a process that would also be useful for industries outside of electrical?
Through the chair, Senator Myers, I think that it can be. I think that you need proper sideboards on the process. I think that we can address some of those things for other industries with the limits. I know that recently we had a discussion about limits within a particular industry, and those limits were set in 1995. Most things have gotten more expensive since 1995, and it's a revenue limit for the utilities within that industry. And I think that we can look at those and change those limits, which would allow smaller utilities specifically to choose to be either deregulated or to use a simplified rate filing system, which is easier. Although it's a less onerous process, I think that you have to at the same time make sure that you are still providing the oversight, because with a full-blown rate case, you typically have other parties involved, and they will, along with commission staff, will scrutinize the process, especially if you have a customer that's involved in it. And I think that that process is good. And typically the SRF system has sideboards on it where you can do 8% a year, no more than 20% in 3 years. And if they need to do more than that, then they have to come in and file a rate case. And then it opens it up to look at additional cost and get more detail that will make sure that we're doing the right thing for the citizens of the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. Johnston? Seeing none, thank you very much for coming to speak to us today.
Thank you.
All right, our third appointee is Stephen D. DeVries. Mr. DeVries, welcome. By now you've seen the process. Introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen DeVries. I'd like to thank you all for the opportunity to introduce myself. Just to start off, as far as my qualifications for the job, I'm a member in good standing with the Alaska Bar Association, and I have well in excess of 5 years of practice. And speaking of my professional experience, because I'd like to start there, in my career as an attorney in the state of Alaska, I have more than 30 years of experience with the state of Alaska Department of Law. I worked in the Attorney General's office in Anchorage for that entire time. represented numerous state agencies and departments. I've represented DNR, Revenue, Health and Social Services, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. When you spend 30 years in the Department of Law, there's not much that you don't do eventually. It's other duties as assigned. In that 30-year period of time, I spent more than 10 years representing the Attorney General as public advocate before the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. So I'm very familiar with the Regulatory Commission, its duties, its practices, its procedures. I did my first stint starting in the year 2000 for, I think, about 7 years. At that period of time, the APUC had just sunset and the RCA had just been created, and I was one of the attorneys that was assigned to do that work. I did that for about a 7-year period of time. During that interim period of time, the function of public advocacy moved from the commission itself to the Department of Law through an administrative change that was made by Governor Murkowski. After, I think, 2007, I moved to the oil, gas, and mining section. I did work there for a number of years. Then I came back to supervise the regulatory affairs and public advocacy section again, I believe, in 2010 or 11, until I was appointed the civil division director. And I did that job until 2018 when I retired. I was retired for about 6.5 years, and I received a call asking me if I would be interested in serving again. And quite frankly, it was a huge honor to be asked to do that. In my career at the Department of Law, I think it was the most professionally rewarding position that I had during that 30-year career. I found the work to be incredibly rewarding on a personal level, as far as being able to protect consumers on one hand, making sure that utilities also do the jobs that they're supposed to do in the way that they're supposed to do it in order to be able to make sure that the economic engine of Alaska is well served. I did that. And so having an opportunity to come back and actually be on the opposite side of the dais, so to speak, as a decision maker was, I thought, an incredible opportunity and a true privilege. And so I'm really thankful to be here and asking for your endorsement for me for confirmation in this position. On a personal note, I've lived in Alaska for 40 years. I've been married for 37 to the same wonderful woman who puts up with me. I have 2 grown children, daughters. I have 2 grandchildren. And I just hope that you have an opportunity to, you know, favorably consider my application for confirmation. And I'd be happy to try to answer any of the questions that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. DeVries. Committee questions. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just following up on the question I asked to Mr. Johnston about, do you have anything to add to that or anything you see different in terms of the challenges that Alaska and the RCA will be facing in the next couple of years?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, I think Commissioner Johnston hit it on the head. I mean, the elephant in the room is the gas crunch that we're looking at right now, and meeting that challenge and figuring out a way to actually meet the needs of the Railbelt Utilities and NSTAR to provide gas to meet our unmet requirements is a huge challenge. And one of the things that we need to be thinking about, I believe, when we reflect on what that could entail is how the cost impact on the rail belt actually have a trickle-down, well, not so much a trickle-down, a direct correlating effect on costs on a statewide basis. As rail belt costs per kilowatt hour increase, it has a direct impact on the opposite end of the spectrum on PCE levels. So as we face increasing costs on the rail belt, we're also going to be facing decreasing subsidies in the communities that face the highest cost of energy in the state. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge challenge, and there's very, you know, we're doing the things that we can as a commission, obviously, to deal with those issues as they come before us. But that is the huge elephant in the room. The rail belt transmission issues, again, touched on by Commissioner Johnston, is also a huge issue. And it's great that we've been given a lot of the tools necessary to make sure that that happens now by the legislature. The eliminating wheel link charges or pancake rates through the rail belt is going to be an effective tool, I think, to help make sure that we work out kinks in providing energy where it's needed through economic dispatch. And so I think that those are the two big issues that are currently facing us.
Follow-up, Senator Dunbar.
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Klayman.
Same question as the others. Please share your perspective on the independence of the RCA.
We are absolutely independent. We are not influenced, and during the course of our adjudications, when we have open cases, we do not talk to anybody outside of the commission about them. It's flat out barred. And I believe it's probably covered something, at least as far as the confidentiality of adjudications. That's a that's actually, I think, in the State Ethics Act. It's a confidential proceeding. But in any case, we do not talk about open dockets to anybody other than commission staff and other commissioner members.
Follow-up, Senator Klayman.
Thank you.
Further questions from committee members? Senator Wilikowski.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, thank you for your service. Thank you for doing this. And I'll just say all three of you appear very, very qualified, and I appreciate you stepping forward. I am concerned about the turnover, and this is a critically important commission in our state. I think a lot of Alaskans have no idea what you do or how you do it, but your decisions have probably a bigger impact on the lives of many Alaskans than probably any other commission in the state. And we're past the days when there were wars over appointees, and I'm sure you were around for those. And, I think we're past that. But how do we get past this staff turnover issue? I'm curious if you have any thoughts on that and the unfilled position issue, because that seems to me to be a big problem.
Through the chair, Vice Chair Wilikowski, I'm hopeful that with the appointments that you're considering now, that we can bring to the commission some mentoring capabilities that will help. I don't know if that will translate into greater retention or if it will translate into a more favorable work environment. I don't know the answers to those questions. I think part of the problems that we face as a state as a whole is one that the commission faces as well, and I believe Commissioner Springsteen spoke to that, is we're facing competition for qualified people from private industry that will or may offer better terms of employment than the state is capable of providing. But that's a problem that the state has faced forever. I faced that problem. I saw that problem firsthand when I was Civil Division Director at the Department of Law. We would lose very competent attorneys to the private industry. That's just the nature of the beast. I don't know that there's a silver bullet to that other than to making our working environment as favorable and as collegial as we possibly can, to encourage our staff who do one heck of a job right now, doing the voluminous work that we have to process right now, given the vacancies that we experience, and they're to be commended because of the heavy lifting that they do with the limited staff and resources that they have. I think the commission in the past, when it was when we had vacancies as on commissioners at the commissioner level, was also a problem because we had more workload that was divvied up onto just those commissioners' shoulders themselves, and that compounds problems. Having five commissioners now, I think, will be helpful. And again, I hope that with the experience that I can bring to bear, that Commissioner Johnston can bring to bear, that Commissioner Springsteen can bring to bear, and that our other two veteran commissioners can also bring to bear, will be helpful in providing, you know, some support and guidance and help to our line staff that are less experienced, because we do have experience that we can offer to folks just coming in and hitting the ground running the way that we, with the experience that we all have. So I'm hopeful that that will provide some assistance, but again, that's not going to be the end of the story. That's not going to be the cure-all for the problems that are facing the state and with the existing vacancy factors that we have. Those fixes are likely to have to come from you.
Follow-up, Senator Wilikowski.
And we are trying. I'm curious, how do you envision the RCA's role going forward in helping us solve the gas problem and the renewable energy problem, the trying to get more renewable energy on the grid? Do you see do you see the RCA's role as being, not to use this pejoratively, reactive in the sense that you just sort of wait and see when people file applications and then you adjudicate them? Or do you see your role more as being proactive and sort of going out and maybe cajoling people and urging people? I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Through the chair, Vice Chair Wilichowski, the commission is largely a reactive body, and the reason we function that way is largely jurisdictional. I mean, we have the powers that you give us, so we can only do what it is that we can do given the tools that you've given to accomplish the tasks that we have. So we generally review things that come into the commission in the form of tariff advice filings or other request petitions, et cetera, to process those under the with sideboards that we have jurisdictionally. We do also have community reach out. We reach out to utilities and other entities to provide information to us in public settings. And during those public meetings, we have an opportunity to quiz utilities in particular as to what their plans are, where they're planning to go, and things that they might need to do, and so that we can be a little bit more proactive on the front end. But generally speaking, we function in a reactive mode based on what is submitted to us. I believe you had another part of your question was dealing with the natural gas problem. Again, that's a jurisdictional issue as well. DNR has full responsibility over Cook Inlet natural gas production. That's not something that we have authority to do. We don't monitor well capability for waste or other things like the AOGCC does. There's a division line between state agencies about what they do and what we do. We review gas supply contracts that are brought to us after the utilities negotiate them. We do not negotiate utility gas supplies. We do not negotiate supply agreements of that sort. That's not within our wheelhouse, so to speak. So in that sense, there's very limited tools that we have to offer in the natural gas arena as far as making or creating a more incentivized opportunity for developing additional gas resources. I hope I've answered your question.
Follow-up, Senator Wilichowski.
And you answered it about as I expected. Can I just ask one more question?
Of course.
And we had this issue comes before us occasionally with RCA issues, bills that come before us. There are occasions when the state provides financing for a component of the development or provides tax breaks for. So, for example, we provided tax breaks for independent power producers. We provided the undersea cable line years ago for Fire Island. Does the RCA, in developing or assessing whether a rate structure is fair, take that into consideration? And I've advocated for many years pass the savings on to the consumers. Do you do that, or do you need some more statutory authority to do that?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Wilichowski, to the extent that the savings are passed on to a regulated utility that has rates that it charges for consumers, then the savings would technically be passed on to consumers, because if it's a grant-funded piece of equipment, or like a submarine cable, like you spoke of, then those costs cannot be included in rates because there is no cost to the utility in obtaining that particular form of plant. There may be operational expenses associated with it that the utility incurs on a day-to-day basis, which would be included in rates, but not the cost of the plant itself. Now, if you provide grant funding for an entity that sells power to a regulated utility, we might be in a very different situation, because then it's going to be the cost negotiated between the utility and the IPP, such as Fire Island Wind or others, that would be brought to us to look at for purposes of assessing reasonableness.
Follow-up, Senator Wilichowski.
And that's, I think, the scenario that we've seen in recent times. We did have a provision in the IPP tax break law that recently passed saying that those tax breaks had to be passed on to consumers, then it was taken out. Mm-hmm. And would that require statutory change?
Through the chair, Vice Chair Wilichowski, I think so, but I'm not sure. I'd have to see the exact fact scenario that you're laying out in order to be able to offer you an opinion on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions for Mr. DeVries? Senator Klayman.
So going back to the concerns that Senator Wilikowski raised with other nominees as well for the hiring and retention issue, I know that there's a limits on what we can do to sort of advocate things with the RCA, but you also know a lot about finding out what rates are like in other places. And I would, does the RCA, if you all feel like you need some kind of salary increase the legislature should consider for your staff, is that something you all have the capacity as commissioners to get the research and send us a request that the commission, I mean, is that in the realm of something you could do in terms of managing an independent agency?
Through the chair, Senator Klayman, I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, I've been on the commission now for 4 months. The administrative function for running the agency is handled by the chair. The chair might have that information. I don't know. But as far as salary structures and whether or not changing the salary structures would function as a tool that would be effective to help staffing levels, I would assume so. I mean, it seems, you know, patently obvious to me. If you increase salaries, you're going to increase the attractiveness of a position. That seems to be axiomatic. But whether or not or how that would be accomplished, I don't know the answer to that. But I know that we are trying as an agency to be creative within the confines of what we have available to us as far as tools to entice new applicants. One of the things that the chair has implemented or is in the process of implementing, which is a great idea, is to create what's called flex positions so that you can kind of grow your own within the agency. So you can have a position that's classified as a utility analyst 1, 2, 3. You can hire at the low level, train that person up, who then has the opportunity to immediately advance within their same PCN to the next step and then to the next step as well. So that's an opportunity to try to work within the tools that we have to theoretically advance or grow expertise within the commission for new people that come in that may not have much in a base level of knowledge of what the commission does and how it does it. Other tools, I don't have the answer to that.
And just a brief comment, not a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just note you're in this interesting place because as a commission that we want to be independent, the notion of us coming in and digging around to say, are your salary levels sufficient? We probably, as a legislature, probably ought not to be doing that, and there's probably not another part of the executive branch that would typically take that on. So it may be something that you as commissioners might want to look at if you really feel like that's a factor we should look at. That might be something you consider, assuming it's within your powers and exactly how that gets managed, I'm not suggesting, but that might be something that you all might look at to try to give you some additional tools to deal with the retention and recruiting issues, because I think Senator Wilikowski's right that this is a really essential in terms of Alaskan consumers, and if we don't have a well-functioning staff, all Alaskans fail. We fail all Alaskans in that process.
Thank you. Further questions for Mr. DeVries? Seeing none, thank you very much, Mr. DeVries, for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much.
We will now... I am now opening public testimony on these three appointees. I see no one online wishing to testify to these appointees. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Please come forward and introduce yourself for the record. I will have my staff capture your name in writing after you're finished.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity. I didn't plan to... speak before the committee today. I am Ray Latcham. I'm president of Norgasco. I'm a long-term natural gas developer in the state. I moved here in 1976. I built 2 out of the 4 natural gas utilities in the state. One is Norgasco, another is Fairbanks Natural Gas. I've also developed 2 small-scale LNG plants, one of which is at Point McKenzie, which is useful in delivering natural gas to Fairbanks today. I was mentored by Jack Farley, a former executive director of the Utility Alaska Public Utilities Commission. First started dealing with the commission in 1985 when Carolyn Guest was the chairman, and later with Susan Knowles as the chairman. I have a very limited interface with two of the four appointees now, and the other two also, but all four appear to be very well qualified. I have obtained a total of three certificates of public convenience and necessity, so I've been through the sausage maker a few times there. I have a fairly good comprehension of how the system works in Title 42. And I would like to say that I think that the main thing is that that you have competent people there, and I think you do. In the past, I've had some questions about some of the folks that were on the commission. And then you bring up the issue of the turnover and funding. The commission, I believe, is still pretty self-funded because when we send out our invoices to our
customers. Mr. Latcham, if you could speak to the appointees, please. That's the subject we would be asking you to speak to.
Okay. Well, I think the appointees are very well qualified, and I would offer positive encouragement for them to be approved. I'm sorry, I did jump over to the funding issue. So that's all I have to offer.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the room wishing to testify on these appointees? I see no one online. Is that correct, Emma? All right. Thank you. So with that, I will close public testimony. Mr. Vice Chair, Senator Wilikowski.
Yes, Madam Chair. The Senate Resources Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointees and recommends that the following names be forwarded to a joint session of the Alaska Legislature for consideration. Regulatory Commission of Alaska, John Springsteen, Stephen DeVries, Mark Johnston. This does not reflect by any of the members to vote for or against these individuals during any further sessions for the purposes of confirmation.
Thank you very much. So these names will go forward to the joint session. There is a document that we will sign, and we'll do that before we depart the room. But I want to not take an ease to do that right now. I want to move forward to the next issue. Before we close out this issue, though, I want to thank all three of the RCA appointees. Thank you for volunteering for this job. I appreciate all of your qualifications, and I further appreciate the changes that we made in the statutes, identifying the qualifications for these roles and the pay scale and things like that, and hopefully this will be helpful in recruiting qualified people such as yourselves for this position. So thank you. Moving on now, the second issue of discussion is SJR 8, Senate Joint Resolution 8, International Relations with Taiwan. This is a resolution brought forward by Senator Elvie Gray Jackson. She is here with us today. Welcome, Ms. Senator Gray Jackson. And Clark Bickford is your staff who is accompanying you. So thank you. I'll let you go ahead and present the resolution.
Senator Elvie Gray Jackson, representing District G in Anchorage. I want to thank Madam Chair and the committee for hearing this resolution this afternoon or early evening, whatever it may be. And I'm truly honored to be here because this is the first time in 6 years that I've been in a hearing before the Resources Committee. So thank you. Senate Joint Resolution 8 reaffirms Alaska's commitment to strengthening its relationship with Taiwan, highlighting the deep economic, cultural, and educational ties between the two nations. Taiwan is a key economic partner for Alaska, ranking as the state's eighth largest export market in 2023 and the fourth largest market in Asia. The resolution emphasizes the importance of expanding trade relations, particularly in Alaska's seafood industry, which benefits from Taiwan's high-quality seafood market. In 1989, the first Alaska-Taiwan trade office opened in Taipei. The trade office was a success in promoting international trade and growth between Alaska and Taiwan. The organization worked to promote trade and cultural contacts between residents of Alaska and Taiwan, and this proposed legislation before us today would promote the same meaningful relationship. Taiwan is a country with a voracious appetite for natural resources, fish, timber, oil, and many other resources that Alaska has in abundance. In 1988, before the trade office was established, sales of fish products were only $300,000 annually. After the office was established, the sale of seafood between Alaska and Taiwan rose to $6 million annually, confirming that the presence of an Alaska trade office will help with the promotion of Alaska's current abundant resources. Alaska and Taiwan have a long history of cultural and educational exchanges with sister city partnerships between Fairbanks and Tainan City, Juneau and Chiayi City, and Anchorage and Taipei City. Reestablishing an Alaska trade office in Taiwan would further strengthen these connections and create a foundation for collaboration in technology, international seafood sales, education, tourism, and much more. STRA supports Taiwan's efforts in maintaining a strong relationship with the state of Alaska. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Mr. Bickford, do you wish to add any comments about the resolution?
Chairman Giesel, thanks for having me today. For the record, Clark Bickford, and I'm here mostly to take notes on our testimony and provide answers if there are any specific questions.
Thank you. Committee members, any question for Senator Gray Jackson related to the resolution? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question for you first. Do we have some invited testifiers?
We definitely do. We have three of them, and then there are two individuals.
Very good. Well, I will hold my question until after the invited testifiers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other further comments? All right. We'll go right to the invited testimony then. First of all, we have Daniel Chen. He is the director of the Taipei Economic and Cultural Office in Seattle. Mr. Chen, welcome to the Senate Resources Committee. If you would introduce yourself for the record and give us your testimony about this resolution. Mr. Chen, are you able to hear us? Perhaps you're on mute. Emma? He's not muted. Well, while that's getting solved, why don't we go on to Sophie Chang. Sophie is the Deputy Director of the Taipei Economic and Cultural Office in Seattle. Ms. Chang, can you hear us? All right.
Hopeful sound.
Mr. Chen or Ms. Chang?
Yes.
Yes. Who are we? Is this Mr. Chen?
This is Daniel Chen speaking. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chair Kiso, and thank you, Vice Chairman Wodinkowski and the esteemed committee member. Good afternoon. I am Daniel Gochin Chen, Director General of TICO in Seattle. That's equivalent of Consul General of Taiwan in Seattle. I represent the Taiwan government in the Pacific Northwest. So honored to be here today to hear this hearing on SJR 8, which calls for strengthening Alaska and Taiwan relations. So special thanks to Senator Greg Jackson for introducing this resolution and, you know, conducting an in-depth research in Taiwan for opportunities of cooperation between Alaska and Taiwan. So I just kind of, as regard to the, we mentioned on this text, I know there's a relations between Taiwan and Alaska can be traced back long. So Taiwan enjoyed a long time partnership with Alaska. So since 1988, Alaska and Taiwan established a sister statehood. Anchorage, Fairbanks, you know, they have their representative, respective partnership with Taipei, Tainan, and Chiayi. So as of 2023, Taiwan is the eighth largest export destination for Alaska and ranked number four in the Indo-Pacific region. So the total trade volume is around $188 million. So what can Taiwan do to help Alaska? So I see there are several aspects I'd like to touch upon. So the first I'd like to raise your attention is the energy cooperation. So with Alaska's vast reserve of natural gases and natural resources, Taiwan presents a growing market for Alaska export as we strengthen our energy resilience and diversification. So as we are speaking right now, Governor Don Levy is right now in Taiwan trying to explore the possibility of exporting LNG to Taiwan. So I think they are, he's very busy talking to the government leaders and also industrial leaders. And the other aspect I'd like to touch upon is the we can expand Alaskan seafood export to Taiwan. So as you know, in 2023, Taiwan imported 1.9 billion of seafood, but yet the U.S. ranked only 10th among our suppliers, only about 1.5% of the market share. So given about the Alaskan reputation for premium seafood, there's a significant potential for growth. So I see strengthening ties between Alaska and Taiwan will undoubtedly, you know, help Alaska fishing industry. And also, I also see opportunity for cooperation on smart city and AI-driven initiative for Taiwan's renowned for high-tech expertise, presenting exciting opportunity for collaboration with Alaska in smart city development, digital infrastructure, and also innovation to enhance urban efficiency. As Senator Greg Jackson also mentioned, for the education exchange. So I think Taiwan advanced technology education is world renowned. So we totally would welcome the opportunity to expand cooperation educational exchange program with Alaska. So final thing I'd like to say to you is the tourism for both sides. So, you know, after COVID, we have witnessed the growth of tourism between United States and Taiwan. So last summer, three airlines joined the Seattle-Taipei direct flight, which will open gate to more Alaskan landscape, like Pinedi National Park, Glacier Bay National Park, and the famous, you know, Aurora Capital, of course, you know, the Fairbanks. So I do see a lot of potential right now for fostering and greater tourism and cultural exchange between Taiwan and Alaska. Senator Greg Jackson's text, I also see there's a demand for resorting trade office in Taiwan. So I think to have an office in Taiwan can help you deepen your economic exchange based on our already strong strong trade performance. And it also enhance Alaska access to Asia Pacific market, especially like the VIP market we call like Vienna, Indonesia, and the Philippines. So let me give you some example under my service area, like Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana. So I think in March this year, there are already 24 U.S. states have established a trade office in Taiwan. So recognizing the strategic components as a trade investment hub. For example, Idaho has their office since 1988, over 30 years. And we are so proud that we are always the number one or number two trading partners. We accounting for 13% of Idaho total foreign trade. Wyoming, they opened their office in 2018. So we see about 52 increase in exports. And also we see about 134% increase within 5 years. Montana, same. Montana, like Alaska, used their office. They closed office in the year 2012. But they reopened the office in the year 2029, which resulting in a 31% export increase within just a year. So that being said, my team, the TICO in Seattle, and I will continue working closely with Alaska state government, state legislature, and other key stakeholders. So we will support effort to reopen Alaska trade office in Taiwan and fostering smooth business connection and stronger economic ties and greater opportunity for both. So thank you for your attention, and I'm happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chen. Any questions from Mr. Chen from committee members? Ms. Chang, Sophie Chang, yeah. You are also Deputy Director, Taipei Economic Cultural Office in Seattle. Do you have testimony to add? Ms. Chang, you may be muted because we're not hearing you.
Vice Chair, I think we may have some technical problem, but what I say can be complete, so we don't have to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chen, for clarifying that. Thank you. Continuing under invited testimony, we have Cam Carlson. She's the Dean of Security and Emergency Management at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. Ms. Carlson, can you hear us?
Chair Diesel and members of the Senate Resources Committee, my name is Cameron Carlson, and I am the Dean for the College of Business and Security Management at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I want to thank you for the opportunity today to speak in support of Senate Joint Resolution 8, which seeks to strengthen Alaska's economic and trade relationship with Taiwan. I would like to first start by briefly sharing how our ongoing efforts at CBSM reflect Alaska's commitment to deepening ties with Taiwan and how this resolution aligns with those efforts. At CBSM, we have been working to develop a partnership agreement with the National Kaohsiung University of Science and Technology, or NKUST. In particular, we are looking to work towards a relationship with their College of Management and their College of Marine Commerce. The partnership is focused on enhancing educational and research collaboration in key areas such as business and marine commerce, sectors that are highly relevant to Alaska's economic future and our trade relationship with Taiwan. This ongoing initiative reflects more than just an academic exchange, I would say. It demonstrates Alaska's broader commitment, if you will, to partnering and fostering meaningful international partnerships. Educational collaboration often serves as the foundation for long-term trade and investment growth, and this partnership underscores Alaska's strategic interest in building deeper connections with Taiwan. Taiwan's significance to Alaska's economy is well established. In 2023, as it's already been noted, Taiwan was Alaska's eighth largest export market and the fourth largest in Asia. The seafood industry in particular stands to benefit from a strengthened trade relationship. The prospect of reopening an Alaska trade office in Taiwan would further boost trade opportunities and create new pathways for economic and cultural exchange. Moreover, I would note that this resolution comes at a time when global supply chains are shifting, and strengthening partnerships with reliable trade partners like Taiwan is increasingly important. Taiwan has demonstrated its commitment to responsible global trade and investment, and Alaska is well positioned to deepen this relationship in a way that benefits both parties. Expanding educational exchanges and joint research projects will also serve to create valuable opportunities for knowledge sharing and workforce development, reinforcing Alaska's role as a leader in maritime commerce and international business. In conclusion, the partnership CBSM is building with NKUST is a concrete example of how Alaska can actively engage with Taiwan to strengthen educational, cultural, and economic ties. Senate Joint Resolution 8 reinforces this effort at the state level and will help create stronger foundations for mutual trade and investment. Thank you for your time today and consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Dean Carlson. Are there any questions for Dean Carlson? I see none. Thank you very much for your testimony. That concludes the invited testimony. Now I will open public testimony. I have two people online wishing to testify. I see Sharon Hugh in Kenai. Ms. Hugh, welcome. If you would identify yourself for the record with your name and a party or name and affiliation with any groups, and give us your testimony. I will allow 2 minutes for your testimony. Okay, Ms. Hugh dropped off. All right. Emily Clock in Anchorage has signed up to testify today. Ms. Clock, can you hear us?
Hi, yes, I can hear you. Good afternoon, Chair Giesel and members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Emily Clock, and I live in Anchorage in Senate District H, so I'm a constituent of Senator Clayman. And I'm calling in support of Senate Joint Resolution 8 relating to strengthening international relations with Taiwan, and I want to urge the committee to pass this resolution. Taiwan and Alaska both have a lot to gain from increased trade and mutual education exchanges. Currently, global trade negotiations are having a big impact on Alaska's economy, and this resolution would help the Alaskan economy by resuming an Alaska trade office in Taiwan, I'm very concerned about the economic impacts of global trade on the people here in Alaska, and I believe any increased trade with Taiwan could help lower costs of goods for people here in the state. And as also has been mentioned, Alaska's seafood industry can really benefit from strengthening our trade relationship with Taiwan. I strongly urge you to support this resolution. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up, I see some additional people. There's Jeff Chen. He is also in Anchorage calling in. Mr. Chen, welcome. Please give us your name, your affiliation, and your testimony. There is a two-minute limit for testimony.
Thank you. Hi, Chair Diesel, members of the Senate Resource Committee, and Senator Alvico Jackson. My name is Jeff Chen. I live in Anchorage in Senator Klayman's district, District H, and House District 16. I'm a multimedia producer, a small business owner, and I'm a former commissioner of the Anchorage Sisters Cities Commission. I'm here representing myself. I'm a Taiwanese Alaskan, and I support Senate Joint Resolution 8 relating to strengthening international relations with Taiwan, because Taiwan and Alaska both have a lot to gain from increased trade, mutual education exchanges, and tourism. I'll share an example of our mutual aid to each other. During the pandemic, I was able to help facilitate through the Taiwanese government and a Taiwanese charity organization a couple of large orders of medical masks and PPE to be sent to Alaska. I happened to be working at ANTHC at the time, and the masks and the PPE were delivered at a critical time when there were worldwide shortages. Similarly, I know the U.S. sent a delegation to Taiwan delivering much-needed vaccines. On a more personal level, when I visit my family in Taiwan, I cherish every moment, from learning about my roots to eating the freshest fruit and visiting iconic cultural sites using public transportation. I often feel like I'm stepping into the future. And similarly, when my family visits Alaska, they get to breathe in fresh air, eat wild salmon, see incredible natural beauty, and learn about the indigenous cultures here. And I feel grateful for these moments. And I would love it if we were able to increase the amount of opportunities for more trade and cultural exchanges. Currently, Taiwan is Alaska's eighth largest export market in the world, reaching $136.8 million in 2023. Two-way trade between Taiwan and the U.S. reached a record $128 billion last year, according to Taiwan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Considering Taiwan is home to the 17th busiest cargo port in the world, and Alaska is home to the fourth busiest cargo airport in the world, I think it makes sense that Alaska would reopen an Alaska trade office in Taiwan. Imagine Alaska having another source of fresh mangoes and guava and all the fun Taiwanese food that's at Costco. Imagine bringing back the direct passenger flight to Taiwan that only takes 8 hours. Imagine more cultural exchanges like the Hakulea boat that began its journey in Juneau, where indigenous peoples from Taiwan and all over the world also came for the send-off. I hope Alaska continues to nurture its potential in connecting to other democracies like Taiwan to build trade and cultural friendships that help bridge the Pacific. Thanks for considering my support for SJR 8. And thank you to Senator LBJ Jackson for sponsoring this bill, for this resolution.
Thank you for your testimony. Tracy Fan is next up. Tracy is calling us from Eagle River. Ms. Fan, welcome. If you would give us your name, your affiliation, and you have 2 minutes to present us with your testimony.
Okay. Hello, hi, everyone. My name is Tracy Fan. I live on Eagle River. Area code is 99577. I am the Anchorage business owner. I'm the Taiwanese Alaska, and I support the student. Nate joined the Celebration 8 because more trade and the cultural exchange will benefit Alaska and Taiwan in many different ways. I would like to see more the tradition between Alaska and Taiwan. One way to help ones that should be is directly fly. And that is the one we are really interested in. And thank you for your consideration. My testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Fan. Next up is Key Ma. She is calling in is calling in from Anchorage. So welcome to the committee. If you would give us your name, any affiliation you have, and 2 minutes for your testimony. Welcome.
Hi, all the senators. How are you? My name is Kimar. I live in the Anchorage. The zip code is 99502. I'm a Taiwanese in Alaska. And I support JRA. I work in the airline with so many experience. And right now I'm a flight school owner. So I in the aviation 30 years. And I really want to know, so Alaska has the best location to aviation. All the connection flights to Asia to United States, every flight that passed the Alaska sky. So I really support the aviation Alaska. We have a direct flight, and also right now the Alaska Airlines have a Taiwan, they call Starbucks. They have a connection culture flight. So if we have the direct flight to Taiwan or the Asia, I think it will be really good to increase the business with the Taiwan. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And next up, we have Calvin Chang calling in from Anchorage. Mr. Chang, welcome. Your name, affiliation, and please give us your testimony in a 2-minute time limit. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon or evening, Chair Giesel and members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Calvin Chang, and I am from Senator Clayman's district. I'm here representing myself. I'm a Alaskan resident of Taiwanese descent, and I really support this Senate joint resolution. I truly believe stronger ties between Alaska and Taiwan would be mutually beneficial for both communities. And, you know, there's just so many great things that could be done, including more tourism, trade, you know, as one of the other folks here stated just now, direct flights would be super convenient. I'm really happy to see such a resolution being put forth. So thank you for considering my testimony, and appreciate it.
Well, thank you for calling in and testifying, Mr. Chang. I don't see anyone else online to testify. I'm going to check with the audio. No one else? Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on Senate Joint Resolution Number 8? Seeing none, we will conclude the testimony today. I'm going to leave public testimony open, however. Questions from committee members. Senator Dunbar, you had a question earlier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is already partially answered, so I'll keep it quick. A statement and a question. We had a good conversation this morning at the State Department of Transportation Finance Subcommittee about trying to get a direct flight to Asia restored at the airport. And the director basically said that there isn't yet demand, or that there isn't the market enough to sustain it. But I would argue that this resolution is another example of how you got to go beyond just the simple numbers of passengers. That there are other reasons we want to establish and grow those connections, whether it's to Narita or Incheon or Taipei directly. Wherever you go, you save a lot of time than versus flying back to Seattle or Honolulu. So I guess my question is not – I'm not asking you to amend this resolution, because I think – my question is, do you think that a direct flight to Asia or Taipei is sort of covered by your request for economic and trade partnership? And then second, would you be willing to send a copy of this resolution, although it's not specified, to our airport directors?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, absolutely.
Further questions, Senator Dunbar?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Senator Kawasaki.
Just a quick question on the fourth further resolved. It asks about it makes a citation including a signing of a trade agreement or tax agreement to promote mutual trade investment. Is there one in particular, or is there anything that's currently in Congress or It just seems pretty vague. I mean, I understand what you're looking for. I'm just curious if there's something more specific to it.
For the record, Clark Bickford, through the chair to Senator Kawasaki. I'm happy to get the confirmed answer for you after committee's over, but I do appreciate the question, and I'll get that to you guys very quick.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions for the sponsor or her staff? All right, seeing none. Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson, for bringing this resolution forward. We're going to set SJR 8 aside for now. This concludes our meeting. I do ask committee members to remain to sign the document related to the appointees to the RCA. The next meeting will be this Friday, March 21st at 3:30 p.m. At that time, we will have Senate Bill 125 related to the Alaska Gas Line Finance Corporation before the committee. At this time, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. The time is 4:55 p.m.